scores! Gilmore scores! With 1:03 left.
Off the glass in left corner to Aguila. Aguila to the left circle. Passing to Yell. A shot. Save made by Aguila. Rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts.
Flames talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers.
All right, let's get this hour underway. Happy Wednesday. It is Wednesday, October 16th with Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. It's Pat Steinberg with you on this hour of Flames Talk, coming at you from our Groundworks downtown studio. Apple, Spotify, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcast. What is happening? AV, how are we doing?
I think we're going to have some fun today. There's some juice in this room right now.
There is some juice in this room. And you know what? We might as well get right into it.
Yep.
Because I think that this topic that we're about to dive in on might get some reaction on the old text line, which is open at 960-960. And I'm always in for a good interactive hour on the text line. Daily Flames Roundtable with Wilsey a little bit later on, but Flames are 4-for-4 to start the season. For the first time in 15 years, the Flames have started the season 4-0. Last time was the fall of 2009 when the Flames ended up going 4-0 and did not go any further than that. They lost their fifth game. I believe it was a loss to Dallas that they lost.
Are you pulling that off the top of your head?
I believe the final score was 4-1. If I remember correctly, in 2009, 2010, they either lost 4-1 or 4-0 to Dallas. Anyway, that doesn't matter. Fact of the matter is, this is just the third time in franchise history they've started 4-0, and they have never started 5-0 to start a season. And Mr. Vickers, who is on Twitter at AA Vickers, people are starting to throw around the P word. People are starting to throw around that taboo word in October for a team that has very low expectations. That P word, of course, is either postseason or playoffs. So P words. And you know what? Why the hell not? And I say that knowing full well that there are many who will say, whoa, back the truck up, throw it in reverse, Steinberg. Text line, jump in, 960-960. Is this program, which goes by the name Flames Talk, are we about to talk about the playoffs 4 games into the season? The answer is yes. Yes, we are about to talk about the playoffs 4 games into the season. Or at the very least, talk about what many people on social media, many people on the text line, and many people in Flamesland are at the very least cautiously buzzing about right now. The numbers paint a very, very interesting picture. I know that you had this number and you saw this.
Let's preface it. I didn't come up with it.
I saw the same numbers as you. Yeah. I saw the same chart that you sent me earlier in the day. Here's the numbers, and I think that the demarcation point of 2005-2006 is really important, because since 2005-06, that's when the kind of new era of the NHL began. That was year one of the cap era after the 2004-05 season was wiped out with a lockout. So 2005-06 is the beginning of the salary cap era, which, you know, here we are 20 years later almost. We're still in the salary cap era. Since 2005-06, 71.4% of teams who pick up 8 of a possible 8 points in their first 4 games have made the playoffs. 71.4% of the time, over the last almost 20 years, if you start the year 4-for-4, you end up making the playoffs. My question on the text line, my question to Aaron Vickers as we get this conversation going: how much does a number like that mean to you on October 16th, now midway through the month of October, and how much does that mean to you with 4 games played of 82?
It means less to me than it should, because when you have a 71.4% success rate of making the playoffs, when you start 4-0, when you take 8 of a possible 8 points to open your season, but I'm not quite ready to declare that the Calgary Flames 2024-25 edition have the horses to parlay this 4-0 start into an appearance in the 2025 Stanley Cup playoffs. I'm just not there yet, but you've seen it everywhere, whether it's on social media, whether it's discussions offline. You see that number, and another number is 80.4% of the time in NHL history. So predating that 05-06 stat. 78 of 97 teams, I think it is, has qualified for the playoffs historically when starting 4-0.
And the reason why I don't love that one as much is just because
it's different eras and different...
Right? Like, I feel like the cap era is a far more relatable and large enough sample size to say, yeah, you've got a real opportunity to put yourself in a spot to be top eight in your conference.
And I'm just not ready to see this edition of the Calgary Flames as a team that's going to make the playoffs. And it's all about sample size to me. We've only seen four games. They have been a great... ish four games for the Calgary Flames, at least from a results perspective. There's been a lot to like through those four games, even against the Chicago Blackhawks, where it wasn't Calgary's best game. They still managed to make it not Chicago's best game and found a way. So there's little victories to be taken out in each one of these wins. And I'm not even saying it's premature to talk about playoffs because, again, the statistics bear it out. You have a greater chance than not of making the playoffs when you have the start the Calgary Flames have started. I'm just not quite there yet. And just to toss one more thing out, you mentioned it's the first time they've started 4-0 since 09-010. 09-010.
I do the same thing.
They did not qualify for the playoffs.
I remember it vividly. They not only did they not qualify for the playoffs, they, I believe, pushed it to 12-4-2 at one point in November and still missed. That's an outlier, though. Like, they were firmly in a playoff spot at U.S. Thanksgiving that year and missed. That was because of a January 8-game losing streak. That 8-game losing...
This guy.
Dude.
Also, it was 5-2 loss to Dallas tonight.
5-2? No, okay.
So,
but it was Dallas?
It was Dallas.
Game, okay. And it, okay, so it was close-ish. Damn.
Points for effort.
Damn, I thought it was 4-1 or 4-0. Ugh, you're an idiot, Steinberg.
How could you?
I remember it vividly because... that year started coming apart at the seams during that eight. They had a great October. They were even better in November. And then it started coming apart at the seams. They were kind of like a 500 team in December. Then in January, they had this awful, awful stretch where they lost 8 or 9 in a row. And it got broken at some point. I believe it was January 31st, the day... or January 30th, the day they broke the streak, and the next day they traded Dion Phaneuf, if my memory serves me correctly, is they broke the streak one night against Edmonton, and then the next day or two days later, they traded Dion Phaneuf.
My apologies. It was January 30th they broke that streak with a 6-1 win against the Edmonton Oilers. Yeah. So you're going off memory. I'm going off hockey reference. Not going to lie.
And is my memory checking out?
So far, so good.
And then I believe one day later they traded Dion. Anyway, that doesn't mean anything. My point is that yes, there are plenty of examples of teams who have started 4-0. Hell, there was a 5-1 start 2 years ago in this market, the greatest 6-game start in franchise history, where they missed the playoffs under Daryl Sutter. So we don't have to go that far back for a great start to be wiped out by an early losing streak or a late losing streak. It can always be wiped out. But I guess here's where I would say I am on the playoff conversation. I am not at the point where I am ready to say playoffs, here they come on October 16th. But I will say I learned a valuable lesson 10 years ago when the Flames made the playoffs in 2014-15 with similar expectations, with similar conversation surrounding the team. Yep. Young players, what are they going to do? Veteran players that, you know, they don't have a superstar, but they've got some good vets and they're decently deep and... 10 years ago, if you listened to whatever the incarnate, I guess it would have been called the Big Show at the time. If you listened 10 years ago to Flames Hockey with me doing calls, if you listened 10 years ago to Rob Kerr and I doing the show, or I guess that would technically be Rob Kerr and me doing the show. If you listened to that time, I was the biggest wet blanket. I was the biggest poo-pooer of...
A little Debbie Downer?
I was a full-on Debbie Downer. No, they're not making the playoffs. Their number, like their underlying metrics are this, and this is going to fall off. Like for a guy on Flames radio, I was pretty negative about them making the playoffs, full on wet blanket. And I learned a very valuable lesson 10 years ago that, yeah, you can make the playoffs and you can win a playoff round in years where you don't have any expectations. So I bring that up as a lesson to me and me only. My experience does not mean that that's how you should form your opinion. But my opinions form because 10 years ago, I learned that, you know what? You can be as skeptical as you want, but sometimes when you build up a cushion, and I remember a text that came in during that year, sometime in November, when I was still very much wet blanketing my way along. And a text came in, and I will always remember it, saying, Pat, what is your issue? They've already done enough to put themselves in a spot where they've got to go out of their way to miss the playoffs at this point. And that text 10 years ago, a little less than 10 years ago, sticks with me to this day. And I'm like, you know what? That stuff, the points early in the year matter. And so, long story short, on October 16th, am I ready to say they're in good shape for the playoffs? Not quite. However, I do think we're now moving towards a demarcation point. There's a second time I've used demarcation. I'm very happy about that. We're now moving towards kind of a pivot point or a threshold point where it turns from good start, surprising start, to they've built themselves up a cushion and they're in a good spot to protect that cushion for the remainder of the year. I don't think we've hit that threshold yet, but I don't think we're that far off. Like, talk to me in 2 weeks and let's see where we are then. And if the Flames continue to play their asses the way they have, if they continue to be competitive the way they have, if they continue to be pulling in the same direction the way they have, if they continue to be physical and block shots and do all that they've done to get themselves to 4-for-4, well, then you know what? Then I'll be ready to say they're in a good position to protect the playoff spot for the remainder of the year. I don't think it's premature to see things on the text line. I don't think it's premature to see social media graphics throwing those numbers out about 80% or 71% or whatever the case may be. These guys have had a hell of a start to the season. They are full marks for their 4-0 start to the season. They're playing for each other. They're playing their ass off. And good on them for making Flames fans excited about what they're seeing and making Flames fans feel like maybe there's more optimism that should be surrounding this group than a lot of people had on the outside coming into the year. And Vix, last thing I'll say before I throw to you, the buzz that I felt around this group from day one of training camp, the buzz that was palatable throughout all of those 3 weeks of camp in the preseason, what guys were saying, and it was very clear to me that this was not just lip service, that they full-on believed these things they were saying, that made an impression on me from day one of training camp. And it's why anytime somebody texted in and said, could this be a group that surprises people? I said, why the hell not? And I've really tried not to be the, oh, these guys are 31st, no questions. Because I don't believe at any point, I never believed that this team was as bad as 31 or 32. And maybe I'll be proven wrong and that's where they finish. There's 78 games still to go. I'm very aware of where we sit in the standings, but or in the season. But there's a very palatable attitude and vibe around this team. They have way more talent than a 31st or 32nd overall team usually does. And they've got some real motivation and they're playing for one another. And so any of this excitement that you might have as a Flames fan, I don't think is misplaced. And you know what? If you're still skeptical, that's fine too. It's only 4 games. But I guess the message that I want to throw out there is if you're buzzing about this team, if you're optimistic, if you're excited, yeah, you should be because they've given you no reason to feel any other way about the way they've started this season.
First of all, the way your eyes lit up when you used demarcation for a second time was adorable, absolutely adorable. Two, told you there was a lot of juice in this room today. And three, yeah, you should be a lot more optimistic than you were 4 games ago before the puck drop on the regular season about what the Calgary Flames could be this year. And they've gone out, and to your point, talking about what we saw and heard all throughout training camp and it being palatable, them not just paying lip service to the, we don't care what the outside thinks. We think we're a good team in here, and we're going to do this, we're going to do that. We've got a good blend of veterans in here that are going to show the way to the young kids, and we're excited about the young kids, and we're excited about the goaltending, so on and so forth. We're excited about competition in camp and opportunity for players. They're backing it up now. They've come out with this start and everything that they said in September and early October about, we don't care about the noise on the outside. We're going to go about our business because we think we're a good team in here and we think we have enough talent in this room to do something. Yeah, they've absolutely gone about their business the way they said they were going to, and they have delivered the quasi-best start in franchise history with the opportunity to be the best start in franchise history with one more win. And you have to tip your cap to them. You have to give them credit. And yeah, you can be encouraged if you're a fan and start thinking about, okay, I know it's only four games, but four games can lead into a 10-game segment, can lead into a 20-game segment. Suddenly that is a quarter of the season. And you're well within your right to feel more optimistic about the chances of what this group is able to do. And I remember in training camp and, you know, games one and game two, cautioning, well, there are a lot of parallels you can draw from 2014, 2015, but I'm not going to declare that that's what's going to happen, because there's way more instances historically, not just the Flames, but league-wide, about, okay, a team that's projected to be in the bottom 10, surprising. It happens, it rarely happens. But through four games, through 240-plus minutes of play, the Calgary Flames have not only backed up everything they said in training camp, but have started to put other teams, whether it's just the Pacific Division, whether it's the Western Conference, but they're putting teams on notice by being one of only four teams still unbeaten in the regular season.
I want to spend a lot of time before we hit the roundtable on the text line. So just a couple more points before we hit that. What needs to happen for the Flames to have a successful P-word conclusion? I think there's a few things. Got to stay healthy.
Yeah.
Boy, that third period. Poor Craig Conroy. Heart probably stopped three or four times in that third period Tuesday night against Chicago. Blake Coleman blocks a shot. Mackenzie Weegar blocks a shot.
Martin Pospisil
goes down awkwardly. The fact that both Weegar and Pospisil finished the game was really, really positive. Coleman went down the tunnel. Did he finish the game? It was late.
I believe he did, yeah.
He did? Okay. So that, but again, you're like, oh my gosh, three times in the third period. And that was a real gutsy character win for the Flames. We'll talk more about that later in the other hour of Flames Talk on this Wednesday. But I think they need to keep on, they got to stay healthy. They got to keep on playing this brand of hockey, which I think can be a difficult brand of hockey to play over the course of, like, the way they're being physical, the shot blocking, the work ethic, all of what goes into the Flames being successful can be a hard brand of hockey. And that is their identity, and that is how they're going to be and stay competitive and or successful. And they need to keep getting quality starts between the pipes. And the way Dustin Wolf has played, you're feeling really optimistic about that 944 through two games. And honestly, I know Dan Vladar's numbers are less impressive or less sparkling, but he's given the Flames an opportunity to win both the games that he's won. And the way that he shut the door in both games, specifically the Edmonton game after they scored 76 seconds in, the way he shut the door, and yeah, he got some posts and some goals that were called back. I realize that, but they don't count because they were illegal goals. The way that he shut the door in the two games, I think, gives you a very positive feeling about goaltending. So those are the things that I think will need to continue. And I guess that also answered the question, Vix, in terms of how do they not end up making the playoffs?
For me, they still need to get contributions up and down the lineup. This team has 11 different goal scorers. That includes 9 different forwards. It's being powered by its depth. There's been a different line seemingly every night that's sort of fueled things for the Flames. And you look league-wide, I believe it's only the Flames and the Rangers that have 11 different scorers. There's 4 other teams that have 10. But the fact that you can go out against the Chicago Blackhawks and not have an A-level game and have your fourth line almost carry you through to victory, that's key. You need to continue to get depth scoring throughout, because again, there isn't a Connor McDavid, there isn't a Nathan McKinnon, there isn't an Austin Matthews. So you're going to need contributions night in, night out from different players. Two things you touched on there. They need to keep playing that same brand of hockey. Absolutely. And you said it. It is a tough brand to play over an 82 game schedule. The Flames are 7th in block shots. They're 4th in hits. It hurts to block a shot. And as much as it is fun to deliver a hit, it can hurt to deliver a hit as well. So staying healthy is absolutely key for the Flames, as you mentioned. Tough to do when you're dishing out that many hits and diving in front of that many block shots. But it's also that blend, it's that style of game, it's that commitment, and it's playing with that pace that should give you optimism that this is a team that can qualify for the playoffs, because that brand of hockey with that dedication to doing the little things right, to having that depth up and down your lineup, those are things that definitely pay off over an 82-game schedule. No matter how hard they are to do, they still pay off.
Text line, 960-960. Let's get to it, because there's even more than I thought there was going to be in terms of response. Alan writes, Pap, that was a really quick rebuild. It only took one offseason, and now they're going to make the playoffs. I think there's a little tongue-in-cheek there, but nobody's suggesting that Conroy's plan is done and dusted.
Right.
It was never... I mean, I think Craig's been pretty transparent in terms of, we're not here to lose, we're not here to tank, we're trying to get younger, we've got a 3 to 5 year plan. And I don't believe that he's going to deviate from that 3 to 5 year plan based on 1 year's results. But it's not like he's going to say, boys, start losing. You know, like, the plan is for you to... No, that's never been a part of this plan. So I understand Alan's tongue-in-cheekness there, but that has never been something that, A, they've never used the rebuild word.
Nope, just me.
Or well, me, you. Or Eric, or just whoever, us. Wes, like, we've all used it. They're not using it. And they've been very adamant that this is not something that is going to be a burn-it-to-the-ground situation where they are content with finishing 31st or 32nd. That's been outside, external expectations for them.
And I think Craig Conroy learned a lot about that 2014-2015 team, because it did seem like they deviated from their rebuild plan when they made it to the second round.
Agreed.
I believe that he's learned that lesson and is not going to change the plan just because of some short-term success.
This says Flames are going to lose the 12th overall pick and stay in the boring middle, as is the tradition for Flames hockey. I know that is very much in the forefront of many Flames fans' mind, that they will give Montreal their pick if it's not top 10. If it is top 10, Florida gets the pick. This reads, points in October count the same as points in March. Absolutely, and we've learned that over the years, good and bad for the Flames. This says the Flames don't have low expectations for themselves. It's the people who talk for a living that have low expectations for them. And that's kind of what they've been saying all along, whether it's Rasmus Anderson or Jonathan Huberdeau,
Blake
or Nazem Kadri, Blake Coleman. The whole idea of you guys talk about whatever you want to talk about. Our internal expectations are not set by Flames Talk or the Big Show or Sportsnet Today or the Hockey News or Sportsnet's Preview or Sportsnet's Power Rankings. Their internal expectations don't have anything to do with what us on the outside, media on the outside, end up saying. Mike in Calgary says, I don't know if you've got this. I know I don't. What percent of teams make the playoffs after winning the first 5 games? Do you have that ready?
I do not.
Okay. You know what?
It's higher.
If they win on, I bet it is too. If they win on Saturday, we'll have that for you on Monday. This reads from Cole. I'm fine with going for the playoffs. Just don't sell off any futures to try and make a push. I'm not convinced they're going to do any damage in the playoffs, but I'm pretty confident we're not getting a top 10 pick to avoid giving it to Montreal. Look, there are still 78 games to go and plenty that can happen. But I am with you. One thing that I think is important that you just pointed out is don't all of a sudden deviate from a plan that you have set in place for fleeting results. And fleeting, all I mean is 1 year. One season does not dictate an entire big picture. And so, no, I cannot see myself, regardless of where they sit in February or March, advocating, yeah, you know what? Give up a first round pick. And I know others will, but I don't think I'll be, and I can't say that for sure, but I'll go on the record on October 16th saying that if the trade deadline, they're fighting for a playoff spot, I am not going to be of the opinion of them going out and giving up assets to bring in pieces to help them win.
No, you're not shoving your chips in, declaring all in on this season for the Calgary Flames. That said, there is a lot of value in having a lot of your young players experience playoff hockey, but you don't do that at the expense of futures.
This reads that the players not get the draft lottery memo. I guarantee you they didn't. Mark and Scenic Acres says, if Conroy gets a very Flames-friendly deal for a Vladar or Anderson or a great player rental, and they're in the hunt, what do you do? I still think you consider it. And I'll Don't forget that in 2015, the Flames traded away not one but two players for nothing in return in terms of like immediate help. They traded away Berchi, who was barely playing, and they traded away Glenn Cross. Now, they did claim Schlemko on waivers, but they...
Which led to the greatest shootout goal in Calgary Flames history.
Maybe second greatest shootout goal in history, period, behind only Marek Malik.
That one is fantastic.
This reads, is this team playing their version of playoff hockey right now? Looks like everyone's trying their hardest just to keep a spot in the lineup. Even if they made the playoffs, is there any room to step it up a notch? That I don't know, but I do know they're playing a balls-to-the-wall brand of hockey right now without question. This reads, what were expectations for those other 4-0 teams? I bet most of them were expected to be good because they were good. Could very well be the case. I don't have every team in front of me, but yes, many of those teams were good.
And maybe the 2024-25 Calgary Flames, which has started 4-0, is a good team, and they just didn't get the dues paid to them prior to the puck drop on the season.
This reads, love the way the team plays. They seem to play for each other, have a bit of a snarl, and Huska has them playing a pretty structured game. It's excited, but they're one or two injuries away from being terribly bad. I don't love the age of their top centers, so part of me still thinks a better draft pick would be better for the future of this team as opposed to making the playoffs.
Cameron Hughes comes through. Teams that have started 5-0 since 05-06 have qualified for the Stanley Cup players 24 out of 25 times for a 96% rate.
24 or 25? Wouldn't that be 90? That'd be 98?
No. No, it wouldn't.
You're right. It would be 96. 48 plus 48 is 96.
That's the highlight of my day. All right, I'm out.
Woo! What's the collarbone called?
Clavicle.
Dirk in Calgary says, means nothing to me yet. Revisit the same conversation on U.S. Thanksgiving. Very fair.
Yep.
What else we got here at 960-960? There's lots of them here. We're trying to keep as many as we can that are on target or on the conversation. This says not to be a wet blanket, but I'm pretty sure you use me and I incorrectly. No, I'm quite sure I didn't. If you are going to say me in a sentence, if it flows naturally without the other person, with me or I, that's when you use the other person. So if I were to say join me on the show, then I would say join Aaron and me on the show. If I were going to say that's what I think, I would say that's what Aaron and I think. That's the grammar on that one. I'm almost certain on that, but I'm always open to be proven wrong, and I'm very open to be proving wrong all the time because many times I am. This says, all right, Pat, let's do some math here. They've got 78 games left and a total possible points of 156. So the question is this, how many points do we need out of a total of 156? Assuming they need around a total of 94 to be in a wild card, which means they need 86 out of a possible 156, which means they need to win 43 more games out of 78. They play the Oilers twice and haven't faced any hard teams yet. Can they win 43 more games? Don't forget, there's also loser points that factor into that. And we've seen many teams make the playoffs based on overtime and shootout losses almost alone. Wedley says, don't dream it's over, Pat. Enjoy the ride, however long it lasts. This says, if they keep the thoughts they're not a great team and they have to work to win, they'll be fine. This reads, from Ned, they have to enjoy the moment, be proud of what they've done. Don't think about what they might do. This reads, honestly, if the Flames keep up the hard work and don't slow down towards the end of the year, I believe they can make it past the first round. Probably an unpopular opinion, but I strongly believe in this group of young guys. Devin and Moose Jaw says, this team feels different than 14-15. If I remember correctly, that season they weren't really playing sustainable hockey. Didn't they have a ridiculously high shooting percentage? Yes. It seems to me they played very inconsistent and got a lot of lucky bounces. I'm definitely not feeling that way this season. That is true and very, very heard.
They also had an ungodly amount of comeback victories in the third period that is just not sustainable hockey over a larger sample size. So they managed to execute it over 82 games, but I wouldn't be banking on it.
Goodness, we're not getting anywhere close to all the texts. I apologize, but I'll get to as many as I can before we pause for the roundtable. This reads an older saying, you don't win the Stanley Cup in October, but you can lose it in October. They're not losing it yet. That's a good sign. This read, the Capitals made the playoffs 9 games over 500 last year. The West is weaker this year. You just never know. As per my statement all last year, Team Tank can pound sand. This reads, Flames make the playoffs. Oilers missed the playoffs, and Ovechkin doesn't score a goal this year. It's a little early, but I'm sure impressed with the work ethic the team is putting on. That's a mean text that I won't read. I'll try to read as many more as I can that are somewhat on target. There's a lot of them. Steven Red Deer says, I haven't changed my expectations at all. As long as they continue to work hard and stick with the system, the results will be what they are. I just hope management doesn't alter the long-range plan based on unexpected success this year. This reads, there's a lot that are not on target. Why are we getting excited about a return to the so-called mushy middle? They need a few bad seasons if they ever want to be elite. Check the last decade plus cup winners. There you go. That's as many as, honestly, we can read based on time constraints at 960. More great ones in there. Some think it's premature. Some think it's fair to be excited. My main, my closing point before the roundtable, I think it's fair to be excited. I think it is fair to feel optimistic about where things are going. Am I ready to say this team's a playoff team on October 16th? Nope. But I think what they've done is impressive. I think what they've done has opened the door for the conversation to be valid. And I don't think we're that far off from a good start turning into a nice cushion and something that they can protect for the remainder of the season. I do not believe the conversation we just had is premature. That is my closing statement on the whole thing. Vickers Steinberg from our Groundworks downtown studio on this Wednesday edition of Flames Talk. Groundworks are your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
You're locked on Flames Talk, only on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Fun first hour of the program continues. Hour one on a Wednesday with Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. My name is Pat Steinberg, and now the Daily Flames Roundtable for Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport. Now the voice of the Calgary Flames, Derek Wills, joins us to complete our Daily Flames Roundtable. Gentlemen, so far, Flames have flip-flop goalies in their 4-for-4 start. Dan Vladar, game 1-3. Dustin Wolf, game 2-4. Both guys are 2-0. How much longer would you advocate for these two to keep going back and forth or something similar in that regard? How much longer should this remain kind of a very even split?
Well, there's an old saying, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. It's working right now. The other interesting thing, when you look at the goaltender splits in the first four games of the season, Dan Vladar has started both road games and Dustin Wolf has started both home games. So I wonder if that has factored into how the coaches have decided to use their two goaltenders to start the season. Of course, the Flames start on the road and then come home and then go on the road and then return home. And the next up is another road game. So wouldn't be surprised to see that rotation continue and for Dan Vladar to get the start against the Kraken on Saturday night. And then after that, the Flames are back at home. And I wouldn't be surprised to see Dustin Wolf get the start against the Penguins next Tuesday night. So right now it's working. So I would probably just stick with it. And unless one guy has a tough night, and then maybe you go back to the other guy for a couple in a row, or, you know, if somebody pitches a shutout, maybe you go right back to him again. But, you know, it's a little bit lighter schedule now that the Flames are through that stretch of 3 games in 4 days. So both guys should be rested. And I think you can just pick the guy who you think gives you the best chance to win, or stick with the plan that you maybe had written in pencil before the season started.
Yeah, for me, I'm of a similar mind where once you get past this stretch, the Flames play once in 6 days. That's at Seattle on Saturday, as you mentioned. Then they start to get into a rhythm of a game every second day. And for me, I run this sort of alternating rotation through the first quarter of the season. That gives you a sample size of 10 games each for each goaltender. And there are some extenuating circumstances. If somebody's got something nagging, or again, if one goalie posts a shutout and you want to get them right back in, by all means, go ahead and do so. But for the most part, I would envision a somewhat even split through the first 20 games of the season. That's a quarter of the season sort of sample size to evaluate where your goaltending is. And then from there, you can start deviating from a one-in, one-out sort of rotation and let one guy carry it if they've shown that they're one of the two guys is ready to carry the ball a little bit more. But I just want to see more than a 4-game sample size, a 2-start each sample size for each goalie before going, okay, Dustin Wolf needs to get a run of games, or Dan Vladar needs to get a run of games. Give me that 20-game mark. That's 10 starts each. And then you can start evaluating from there, riding the hot hand.
Yeah, I mean, as of right now, like I'm with you guys and Wilsey. I'm very much in the same, like, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And even if they do, like even if a 4-0 start turns into a 4-3-1 start all of a sudden, yeah, I still don't think that you need to be going away from it, because I think right now, especially with this position, it's very much an exploration and a learning opportunity for him. I know the numbers would suggest one thing. One guy's got a 944 and the other's got a 880. Vladar's got the 880. Wolf's got the 944. But I honestly don't think the way they've played, there's a ton between them. I've quite liked the goaltending period for the team, regardless of who's been in net. And so I just think it's important to continue with the same idea that you've had so far. And part of that is getting Dan back up to speed after significant hip surgery in March. And part of that is making sure that you give Dustin Wolf, the guy with less experience than Dan, the guy who's in the NHL full-time for the first time, you also are, I don't want to say protecting him, but putting him in a situation where he can succeed. And with no disrespect to Dan Vladar at all, Dustin Wolf is the guy that is most pegged as the potential goaltender of the future. And so putting him in a situation where he also, especially in the early going, can build some confidence and build some momentum, that's important. And I think, to your point, Wilsey, that's a big reason why he's got the two home games and Dan's got maybe the more difficult divisional road games in hostile environments, because Dan's got a little more NHL experience. He's been in those situations a little more than a guy like Dustin has. Point being,
yeah, absolutely.
I think continuing doesn't have to be hard every other night, but I think continuing for this tandem and continue basically having it be a number one and a number one, or a 1A and a 1A, I just think it serves them pretty well, whether it's 20 games or 40 games or whatever. I just think you want to continue to get as much of a book on both of them before you start giving one guy an absolute run. And obviously a guy who goes on a ridiculous, if he, one guy gets a shutout and then another shutout and then makes 41 of 42, well then sure, there's always, everything's written in pencil. But I think the whole idea of making this a true tandem for a large majority of this season, I think there's a lot of wisdom to that.
Yeah, and I think both goaltenders have been fantastic. And the reason that Dan Vladar's save percentage is so much lower than Dustin Wolf's is because of what happened in the first period of the first game of the season. You know, there was that JT Miller hit on Kevin Rooney, which led to chaos and a bunch of Flames penalties and a bunch of Canucks power plays and power play goals. Outside of that first period, if you were to calculate his save percentage, I'm pretty sure it would be well over nine. So that that sub 900 save percentage, I think, is really misleading because of what happened in the first 20 minutes of the season. But as far as kind of planning out the first four games, I've got to think that Dan Vladar's record against the Oilers, and with that game being the second half of a back-to-back on the road, I don't think you want to put your young goaltender into that spot, especially when you've got a more experienced guy who's had a lot of success in his career playing in the Battle of Alberta. So between that and giving the veteran the start in the season opener versus the Canucks, I think that probably explains why each guy has had two starts to get this season going. But again, if they go to Vladar versus the Kraken on Saturday, then I would actually be surprised, barring a shutout or like you said, 42 out of 43 or something like that. If they can go back to Wolf against the Penguins next Tuesday, you probably want to get both guys a game between now and then, so one guy's not sitting too long. But hey, it's a good problem to have, right? I think the biggest question mark for me and many others going into the season was, will Flames goaltenders give them a chance to win on a consistent basis? And when Jacob Markstrom was right, you felt like he would always do that. And yeah, he was a little bit up and down during his tenure here, but you know, last season he was really good and gave him a fighting chance to win almost every night. Would Dan Vladar and Dustin Wolf do that this season? There were question marks. I would say four games in, despite the 4-0-1-0 start, there are still question marks, but so far so good, and you couldn't have asked for a much better start.
Daily Flames Roundtable, Derek Wills, Aaron Vickers, Pat Steinberg on this Wednesday edition of Flames Talk. And I know that we discussed this prior to Tuesday's game against Chicago, but guys, I think we would be remiss and we would be skipping over an important story if we didn't talk about it the next day, because Tuesday night, And what did Ryan Huska say? He pinpointed five guys in the postgame show. He pinpointed Kevin Ball. He pinpointed Dustin Wolf. And then the fourth line of Ryan Lomberg, Matt Coronato, who had two goals, and Justin Kirkland, who has turned into a real fun story here in the early stages. Kirkland scored his first goal, first career NHL goal Sunday in Edmonton. Two nights later, picks up his first assist on Matt Coronato's 1-0 goal in the second period or first period. So I ask you guys, how do the Flames keep Justin Kirkland on this roster going forward? Because he continues to impress, and for a second consecutive win, he was a real catalyst of Calgary's best line on the evening.
Well, first of all, just in defense of the top nine forwards and most of the defensemen, I think one of the reasons why the fourth line was so effective playing a third game in four nights is because they don't play as many minutes as, you know, the first, second, and third line guys do. So they were probably a little bit fresher. And you're going to have nights where your best players aren't your best players, and you need your role players to pick up the slack. And that is exactly what a bunch of those guys did in that 3-1 victory over the Blackhawks. So good on them. As far as Justin Kirkland is concerned, he's been a great story. Love the nickname. Didn't realize he had that Costco nickname until I was driving home after last night's game.
Oh, no.
Talking about it. Didn't realize. It's such a great nickname, though. So whoever came up with that one deserves kudos for sure. But for me, it's pretty simple, and I hate to pick on one guy, but there is one player on the roster who has not appeared in a game this season. So if I have to make a decision today, and assuming everybody's healthy and good to go for Saturday, I probably have to put Joel Hanley on waivers. And nothing against the guy. He's an NHL defenseman, whether that be a 6 or a 7 or an 8, and he's clearly been their 8 to this point in the season. But if you don't want to risk, and I wouldn't want to risk losing Justin Kirkland on waivers right now, then you're going to have to make a choice between him and someone else. And for me, the obvious guy who that would be is Joel Hanley. They've rotated Tyson Berry in for a game. Braden Pahal, going back to the preseason, has been so good. They really can't take him out. And obviously, Jake Bean is a guy who you want playing way more often than not. They gave him one night off. He comes back and I think plays a pretty good game in his return to the lineup. So for me, you probably have to put Joel Hanley on waivers, assuming everybody stays healthy when you have a decision to make.
Yeah, the quickest way to go about it would be, once Kevin Rooney's activated, would just simply be send down one of Klapka or Hanzik, because neither requires waivers to go down. But if you're taking the more proper route, if I can say it that way, it would be to waive Hanley. And I don't even necessarily think you'd want to go the route of waiving Rooney to create the space for Kirkland as well, because you did take a hit to your center depth when you lost Cole Schwint on waivers to the Vegas Golden Knights, and I don't think that's a route you want to go down. And I don't think Kevin Rooney's done anything to lose his spot on the roster. So to me, it comes down to if you're keeping Justin Kirkland up and you need to create a spot, I like you, Wilsey, and it's no slight to Hanley. It's just the nature of a roster crunch. Hanley would be the guy that I would be putting on waivers to make sure that you can keep Kirkland around.
It's a fascinating one, because I don't know how close Rooney is to returning. He was sitting up there with the other injured and scratch guys on our side, Wilsey, during the game against Chicago on Tuesday. He looks fine, but again, I think we don't know for sure, but I think it's fair to at the very least suggest an upper body and potentially a concussion are what we're talking about. He has been classified day-to-day since Wednesday of last week when he was injured, and he is now eligible to be activated at any point. He's served the minimum on injured reserve. So could very well be a scenario where Kevin Rooney is ready to return on Saturday against Seattle and you activate him. We'll see how that plays out. But yeah, I think there's a lot of moving parts to this one. Joel Hanley on waivers is something that absolutely could make sense, but they sent Jacob Pelche on waivers to avoid putting Hanley on there because they didn't want that many D-men in the American Hockey League. I don't think that's changed. I still don't think they want to jam up their blue line in the American League. However,
things have changed a little bit. You're trying to win hockey games, and all along, Ryan Huska and Craig Conroy have been adamant that they want to ice the very best lineup that's going to give them the best opportunity to win. With no disrespect to Kevin Rooney, right now, as it stands, Justin Kirkland's part of that. And I don't think that Kevin should lose his spot due to injury, and I don't think that he should be the guy going to the American League by any means, but I do think as long as Kirkland is centering a very effective fourth line with Ryan Lomberg, who's been great, and Ryan Huska's been raving about him, with Matt Coronato, who's played back-to-back really good games and, you know, scored twice on Tuesday night, very hard to talk about him coming out of the lineup. Sometimes plans change and you have to do things that maybe you weren't thinking about. So Hanley would be the most obvious. Maybe it's an AHL assignment for a guy like Klapka. I'm not quite ready to put Hanzek in the American League. I liked his first three games. I thought he struggled for the first time against the Blackhawks, but that's also Hanzek's first ever game, to your point, Wilsey, or first ever time going 3-4 at the NHL level. A little different than going 3-4 or 3-3 at the junior level compared to going 3-4 with all the travel and just the wear and tear of an NHL game. So they definitely have some options. I'm really curious. All I know, guys, is that at this point, you can't be sending Kirkland down to the AHL. He's been too good for you.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. And I would not put Kevin Rooney on waivers either.
No, I wouldn't.
Leave him on IR as long as you have to for him to get back literally to 100%, because you have the option to do that right now, because Justin Kirkland has stepped in and played at such a high level that you don't feel the need to rush Rooney back. But after losing Cole Schwint on waivers, I don't think you can risk losing another centerman. Can you?
Probably fair.
I don't think so.
Yep. Probably fair.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Kevin Rooney, Justin Kirkland, I think you like either one of those guys centering your fourth line. And with the way that Kirkland's playing, again, you're in no rush to get Rooney back. You want him to get healthy. That's, I think, the first priority. But he sat in the press box for more than half of last season. If he has to spend a little bit more time up there now, I think that's okay. Adam Klapka, I thought he was playing fine. And if Matt Coronato hadn't broken out in that game against the Blackhawks on Tuesday night, you know, maybe Klapka would be going back in on Saturday night. It's not like he didn't show well. I just think that they were looking to make a change and give Matt Coronato an opportunity. And you know, he plays well enough to go from the fourth line to the first line. And now I wonder if he might replace Sam Hanzek on the left side of that first line with Nazem Kadri and Andre Kuzmenko, because, you know, they used him in that spot, not with those two guys, with Kadri. And we'll have to wait and see where that goes. But you could start Hanzek on the fourth line and kind of play him in the same role that you were playing Coronato in, and give him a chance to maybe move up the lineup if you want to shake things up, or you're protecting a lead late in the game, whatever. So you've got to some different options there. But yeah, I don't think you could put Justin Kirkland on waivers with how he's played. And just a quick clarification.
Kirkland does not have to clear waivers for the time being. He's got that exemption period, but Rooney would. Kirkland doesn't, because he already cleared. So he's got 10 games on the NHL roster
or 30 days
on the NHL roster. Just wanted to clip, but they would have to put Rooney on waivers.
Yeah. I forgot about that. I forget about it all the time. Down anyway with the way he's playing. So, but I guess if you had to, you could. And it's a small sample size. It's a small sample size for him. He's played in a couple of games. Small sample size for the team. They've played in four games. Everything's going great right now, but it can change quickly, as we've learned both ways. So we'll wait and see where it goes. But they have problems that are good problems to have right now, it seems.
Yep.
And it's a good problem, exactly. If you're Ryan Husker, if you're Craig Conroy, the issue is you have too many players you want to get into the lineup for positive reasons. It's not the reverse, where you're trying to find guys to go into the lineup that you want to keep. It's a great problem to have if you're the Calgary Flames early in the season.
Yep. Good stuff, Wilsey. Good chat. And now we've got two more games until another game day on Saturday in Seattle. Be well. We'll talk to you on Thursday. Thank you, pal.
Okay, guys. Have a good night.
He is Derek Wills. He is Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg. That'll start to wrap us up this hour. Thanks to Shan and Cam, our outstanding producers this hour as well. That's been the Daily Flames Roundtable for Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport.